Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi.
I've joined Kim Myers to our conference call. If anybody needs any assistance, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero.
Hello, everyone. We're going to go ahead and wait until about 2 minutes after the hour to go ahead and get started to give everybody an opportunity to log in. And just so you all know, we will be keeping the phone lines open so that you can ask questions as we go through the process. So I'm going to go ahead and put you on hold in the meantime, and I'll see you in just a few minutes.
Please press any key on your phone to remain in conference.
Hi, everyone. This is Kim over at the NAIC. We're just going to wait a couple of more minutes, probably about 2 minutes after the hour, to go ahead and get started. And I should let you all know that none of the sound will be coming from the actual webinar application itself. The audio needs to be heard via the chorus call lines. Hi, everyone. As folks end up joining, I'll do a reminder again that we'll go ahead and get started about 2 minutes after the hour.
Hello.
Hello, this is Century Insurance.
Hi, this is Sharice with Colonial Fund.
Hi, Michigan Farm Bureau Insurance.
American Enterprise.
Oh. I had a take. Have you any of those take five?
No.
They're really good.
Please mute your line.
Hi, everyone. This is Kim from the NAIC, and we're going to go ahead and get started in about 2 minutes.
Please press any key on your phone to remain in conference.
Hi, everyone. This is Kim Myers from the NAIC, along with Lois Alexander and Chris Witt. And we're here to welcome you to the Life Insurance Policy Locator webinar. I would like to let you all know that your phones are live, so please go ahead and put your phone on mute We are operator assisted, so just in case there is noise in the background, we can have it eliminated. Please be aware we are recording this session. And when you do have questions, if you wouldn't mind stating your name and the company you're representing so that we can help answer your questions. And if we have to do a follow-up, we know who to follow up with. Do I have any questions to begin with? No, let's go ahead and get started. The objectives of the project are to do an overview of phase one of our project, and that presentation will be pretty quick. We're going to overview phase two of the next project, which will include potential screen designs that are there for discussion purposes. And as we present those screens, we would like to talk and finalize the data elements, as well as finalizing our requirements for the project. So let's go ahead and get started. Phase one will require the consumer, that person who's looking for a life insurance policy, to log into www.naic.org and then click on the consumer tab up in that upper right-hand corner. Once they click there, you'll see the consumer page, and all the consumer has to do is click on the artwork for Life Insurance Policy Locator, and there are other places on the website where you'll see that same artwork that function essentially the same. Go ahead and click on them, and you will proceed to our initial screen of our Phase 1 project. The application was designed to be mobile-friendly, so consequently, if you're on a small phone, that map will not render. And on the next screen, we'll show you what the drop-down box looks like. But our regulators, our state departments of insurance, had four options that they could select when a consumer clicked or selected on the name. It was a link to a URL on their own website, or to provide us an email address, in which case an email will be sent to that Department of Insurance, and we'll show you what that screen looks like. Or they could have provided us a phone number to help the consumer contact them, or just a simple message that says the NAIC is building a national search process. So this is what the drop-down box looks like. It's a simple selection for your client. And if they are redirected, for instance, to the state of Missouri, to a state-specific application, what will end up happening is it will redirect to that state's actual website. As you can see, in this situation, Washington forwards on how to find an insurance policy page. The states that follow this type of process are Alabama, Delaware, Hawaii, Illinois, Kansas, Louisiana, Maine, Michigan, obviously Missouri, North Carolina, New Hampshire, New York, Oklahoma, Oregon, Tennessee, and Texas. Additionally, we have another two states that will redirect to another page on their Department of Insurance or state website. Those two states are Wyoming, which is depicted on the left and just gives information to the consumer on how to find a policy, if possible. The one on the right is Wyoming, which just links to their complaints page so the consumer can send in a request. We have seven states who've chosen to have the consumer send them an email. And the first piece that they're presented with is basically an agreement to say, hey, this is what's going to happen with the process. When they click on the button that says go to form, they will be presented with a form with information that they can fill out that is then mailed to the State Department of Insurance. Sorry, I'm flipping the page and it's being uncooperative. For those states that have a message to display, for instance, the state of Florida, it just gives a little bit of information on how to contact the state. And finally, the generic message that pops up that just says the NAIC is in the process of building a national search. How the states handle the request once they've been sent to them is up to the individual Department of Insurance. Now let's get started on phase two of our project. We are just in the process of completing requirements. The project team completed a series of three meetings with the regulator subject matter experts group on August 16th. The process consisted of those three meetings, and the members will also help us beta test the application. The jurisdictions represented in the group were and are California, Iowa, Missouri, Nebraska, New Hampshire, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, and Wisconsin. The group consisted of jurisdictions that have applications in place, as well as those who are waiting for a national solution. In addition, Rhode Island and Vermont have also agreed to participate in beta testing of the application. Once we understood what our regulators were looking for, we completed a series of three meetings with an industry focus group that concluded on August 23rd. The American Council of Life Insurance, SHRS, or the ACLI, helped form the group. The following companies were represented in this group. And sorry, this sounds so rhythmic. New York Life, Symetra, Mutual of Omaha, Lincoln Financial, Lincoln Heritage, Guardian Life, Homesteaders, CNO Financial, Pacific Life, Principal, TIAA, Torchmark, Western and Southern, Transamerica, and Voya. Finalization of the consumer application requirements were completed on September 15th, and we're in the process of testing that application. To continue requirements gathering, our next steps are to finalize the insurance application requirements, and we hope to conclude that by September 30th, which is why we have you all on the phone. In addition, we'd like to finalize regulator reporting requirements on October 7th. Now, I should make a note that the difference in the dates is we plan on installing pieces as they go. Obviously, the process is the consumer submits a request. Those requests are gathered for a month. Then the industry is notified, and then they can begin downloading the searches and doing their work. And ultimately, our regulators would like to be able to do some reporting. That's why we've looked at the varying dates. So design and application testing. We anticipate beta testing for the consumer industry applications to occur in the month of October. And I should let you know that our industry focus group members, the majority of them have indicated that they are willing to help us beta test the application as well. We anticipate beta testing for the regulator reporting to begin immediately after we've completed the consumer and industry application pieces and have worked out all of our beta testing. So let's talk about those objectives that are consumers, those people who are out there looking for a life insurance policy for a deceased loved one. They would like to have the ability to submit a single search. Today, when a consumer goes ahead and does a search, even if they use the NAIC's Phase 1 application, they still have to submit the information to every single state where the consumer's loved one had lived. For instance, if my parents had lived in Arizona, Kansas, and Missouri, I would have to contact each one of those state departments of insurance in some way. The next point is the ability to search against all the participating life insurance companies and annuity providers filing an annual financial statement with the NAIC with $50,000 in annual premiums. And knowing that this is a voluntary program on the part of our insurers and annuity providers, we'd like to provide the ability for them to have one place to go and consistent data you're downloading. We'd also like for the consumers to eliminate the need to submit a death certificate. Some of our states who have applications in place require a death certificate, largely to reduce phishing requests. So we're going to talk a little bit about phishing when we get into the application design itself. And we would like to provide consistent information regarding the requester and the decedent. So no matter where you're coming, the information is going to be consistent. And we'll talk about those requirements when we get into the screens themselves. Any questions so far? Nope, quiet group. So this is the first screen that our consumer will see. This application will replace the application that's currently in place when it goes into production. So again, they'd just be simply clicking on the artwork. And the first page they would get is a welcome screen. The verbiage on the screen will change. We're in the process of running it through our legal department. And then the consumer can also access a user guide that will also give them information on how to get an email address should they not have one. The next set of screens are agreement details. And while the verbiage will end up changing as we go through legal, in essence, this is just to provide you an idea of what that screen will look like. The consumer will need to click on each of the checkboxes, enter their email address, and then verify their email address. Should the consumer not have an email address or not have a desire to get an email address, basically, they can fill out the paper and they can mail it in to their Department of Insurance, who will then help follow up. And that was done at the request of our regulator group. The next screen is information about the requester themselves. So this is about me filling out information about my father. The required information is listed in red. So we'll go ahead and talk about them. They are the first name, the last name, my address, and there's a drop-down box that will give you the country, my street address, my city, my postal code, my relationship with the deceased, and this will change to say primary phone number. The optional field values are middle initial, suffix, and street address 2, and the purpose for that is to allow the apartment number. Now, I'm sure you're all wondering what that little drop-down box on relationship to deceased says. We're offering 5 options. Those options are spouse, child over 18, executor, attorney or legal representative, and other. And when I click on other, it will pop me up a text box that I can complete some more information on. Any questions here? My next page is now information about the decedent. The required information, and you'll notice, is pretty minimal. Both our regulator group and our industry group decided that our required fields are the last name of the decedent, their date of birth, and a full Social Security number. The rest of the information being added is to help in those searches for you all, and they will include the first name, middle initial, the suffix, the state country code, street addresses, postal codes, obviously the city and the state, other legal names previously used, and our industry folks have said we will max that out at 10, and previous home addresses, which we will max out with 3, along with date of death and whether the decedent was a veteran or not. Any questions? Once the application is complete, the consumer can then click and they'll get to the next screen, which is the confirmation of a request. It's basically all the information that they've provided to us. They have the option of going back and correcting any information. They can cancel the request altogether, and when they click that button, it will send them all the way back to the welcome page, and no information will be saved on the system at all. If they choose to submit the request, it will send them a confirmation email containing the same information as well as some information on the next steps. Let's talk about those screens themselves. Oh, sorry. And they'll receive an email with the reference number that will be sent then when they have further questions that they can direct. All right. So let's talk about industry objectives. Again, because of the 17 different ways of things to do that are applications today, as well as those one-off questions that you all end up getting, we know that you would like to have a single access point to use to download searches. On the first business day of the month, you'll receive a broadcast email indicating that there are searches to be completed. Now, I am sure you're wondering what email you will be using, and that will be an email that you all have provided to us, along with when we provide your LDAP authentication into the system itself. And you'll have a single access point to update bound policies and contracts. There'll be standardization, obviously, of the policy found information and summary and detail reporting regarding the search request. Let's talk about your screens. Now, we should note, you'll notice that the screens look a little bit different than the previous screens, and that's because these are still in mock-up phase because we have not completed requirements with you all. The screen will eventually essentially provide you with a year that you can select, and upon selecting the year, you will have a drop-down of the month where we have searches available for you. This screen mock-up was assuming that we're in February of 2018, probably in the month of March. And where it's blue, it means that you can download a search request. That month of August under 2017 is in black because it was an indication that there was no information for you to be able to search, so it's not a clickable entry point. We should note that our regulators requested that we also change the colors once a search has been downloaded already, so visually you can see that the search has already been downloaded once. We're anticipating that we're going to put the most current year on the left-hand side of the screen rather than on the right-hand side of the screen for usability purposes. Your next screen is obviously the one I think that you all probably care the most about, so we're going to talk about it in some detail. In meeting with our regulators and with our industry focus group, we talked about the field values that would be required. So first of all, we should note that you're only going to use this screen when a policy has been found for a request that was initiated from this process. So if you found a life insurance policy or annuity contract for my dad based upon a search request, and I am the beneficiary or someone I listed in the request, you could click that, that's when you would be entering this policy. If the policy was found through escheatment purposes, that's different and it's not reported here. This is also a screen that will be entered per life insurance policy or annuity contract. So if you found two for my dad, you would be filling out two of these. So let's talk about what the information is that's on here. The insurer would be required to submit the following information: the request ID, the company code, and that's the NAIC company code that's assigned to an insurer, the policy number, a claim initiated, and it's going to default to no, so enter yes if the claim process has already been initiated, and a policy type. The policy type information becomes very necessary when we talk about those optional fields, which are the policy face amount, and we are under the understanding that oftentimes, especially on an annuity contract, the face amount of the policy may be zero. If zero is entered, it has meaning, and you will end up getting a box that provides information to provide details on why the policy face amount is now at zero, as well as a check number as optional information. And all of these fields, including all of the requester fields, would be made available via reporting to make life easier for you. It should be noted that, you know, we had quite a bit of discussion on this particular screen itself. Our end goal is to make sure that the industry is doing their due diligence, and very few policies will really be found through this process. During the webinar with the regulators on the 31st, is when we decided to go ahead and add an indicator for active or inactive policy. And if you all have any questions, please go ahead and let me know. Any questions for you all?
Hi, this is Elena from MassMutual. One clarifying question. You want us to enter information regardless of whether there is a benefit due. It's for all policies found regardless.
For all policies that are found through this process, yes.
Regardless of whether a benefit is due or not.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Tim Kovacic with Michigan Farm Bureau. I have a question. Hi. So our regulatory agency has created a system for this same purpose. And right now in the phase one version of your site, when you click on the state of Michigan, it brings you to our regulator's website so that you can get into their system. And their system is also a system where they're planning on uploading search results that we're supposed to check every month to see if they have any search results for us to act upon. It seems like this system is very similar to that. Is the NACE system going to overtake our state's system in phase two?
I wish I had a complete answer for you on that one. Several of the jurisdictions or departments of insurance have indicated that they will probably eliminate theirs and redirect to the NAIC. Others have not given us that indication yet. We have several states that have legislation that's specific to the state that I'm not sure would allow them to pull their own state down.
An example of that, this is Lois, is New York, which their state law, I'm sure you're probably aware if you do business in New York, it mandates this process. So we're still in discussions with the states, and that will continue. The hope is and the intention is that they will be replaced for the most part, hopefully all, in order to provide a uniform spot for everybody to access the information and to input it to make it easier throughout the process.
Any additional questions for us?
Hi, this is Connie from Foresters. I don't have video access to what you're seeing. I only have the audio. Can I be sent a link for that?
Yes, the link was in the invitation. It was at the bottom of the page. Do you have the invitation with you by any chance, Connie?
Well, Connie, I can tell you that we're in the process. I just have to edit this very same presentation without somebody being on the call. We've recorded and will be uploading to YouTube very shortly.
And also the slides will be posted. They're already or they will be posted out on the website shortly, so you'll be able to see the slides and hear the audio.
Okay.
In addition to the video that Kim's talking about.
I can go ahead and send her a copy.
Right. That'll work.
Yeah, and Connie, I'll give you my email address, and I will mail you a copy of the PowerPoint. So before
okay.
we disconnect, these guys, the people in the room need to remind me to ask you for that email address.
Or you know what? Kim's email address is at the end, and so is mine at the end of the – oh, you can't see us. I'm sorry. Well, at any rate, it's our first name, our first initial and last name at NEIC.org. So L, Alexander, at NEIC.org, and K, Myers, M-Y-E-R-S, at NEIC.org. Okay?
And we'll be happy to share that with you.
Yeah, sorry about that.
All right. Any additional questions regarding the industry application itself? And if any of you were willing to help beta test, you're more than welcome to help. And I should let you know that we do intend to send a follow-up email after the first business day of the month. We just need to work with you all to find out how often that would be, because we don't want to spam you with reminders either.
I did have another question.
Okay.
Is the NAIC's website and system required for use in all states?
I'm not sure what you mean by that. It is going to be nationwide. And if you mean, is it mandated? No, it's a voluntary process.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I have another question. This is Ann Benzer with Cincinnati Life. What's the format of the download that you'll be sending? Is it an
XML? It
will
be in CSV.
CSV. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. And the same thing holds true for the reporting we're planning on building you, which will just be very flexible. You can select a date range, the company, and obviously you're only going to have access to the companies that you as a user have access to, and then any of the field values, and you could sort it any way you want. So we're planning on building it very flexibly and doing it in CSV format for you. Anything else?
This is Dawn Cochran from Transamerica. You said to let you know if we wanted to beta test. Who would we contact if we want to do that?
You can contact me, kmyers@naic.org. We would love to have participation in that beta process. And we also have some consumer representatives who are going to help us test the whole entire life cycle of the process as well. And, you know, our goal is we are moving pretty quickly.
Very quickly.
Very quickly. And we hope to have the consumer application installed sometime in the month of November, which means that the first time the insurers would be able to see things, we're hoping to have your side of the application in the month of December. So very rapid timelines. Let's talk a little bit about those regulator objectives. Like you all, they would like summary and detailed reporting regarding the search requests themselves, those consumer information, as well as summary and detailed reporting regarding the status of the industry searches. And one thing I didn't make very clear in retrospect is that the consumer does not get a full life cycle of what's happening with the request. So in other words, the only information they're going to get back from the NAIC is just a simple email saying, hey, you've submitted this search. It's now in the hands of the people who are doing the searches. They'll not be notified that a search has been found. That's not our responsibility?
The insurance companies, that is you all, will take on that as part of your usual claim processes, and
correct.
I'm sure you prefer it that way and keep our fingers out of it.
Yep. And so there's no notification when a policy's been found, when a policy's not been found. We're just going to give them in that email confirmation, hey, wait a period of time before you go out and do a request again. We have had some questions on what happens if a consumer has done a search in the month of October, waited 6 months, or even the next month, and did another search. Some of that we anticipate being made visible in the reporting. So if you have a question, you could certainly pull some reports down to help navigate that process, because we'll make it flexible and sortable. Same thing holds true for our regulators. They had some metrics.
Yes?
Go ahead.
This is Uju with Zurich American Life Insurance Company. Do you already have some sample reports available so we could see?
No, we don't. In fact, it's very timely that you asked that question, because I just completed the mock-up of the reporting yesterday, what the screen would look like. I can anticipate what it might look like, and we can certainly share that screen with you all and Ashley over at the ACLI to help facilitate sending that information out. But it's really basically, honestly, anything that a consumer has submitted in terms of the requester and the deceased detail, and any information on any found search policies that you have. And you can select by mixing and matching what field you want. You can sort, you can select date ranges. We're not anticipating ever throwing any of the searches away. And then it'll all be in CSV format. And typically the headers of those reports look like what we've named the database field, so that it makes sense to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So those metrics of the searches really were number of searches resulting in a found policy or contract, and the policy face amount. Now, the regulators are not obviously going to contact anybody with a policy found amount. It's just kind of an idea of finding out, and some of our states, like Oklahoma, I believe, already post the number of policies, the face amounts for those policies that have been found. And it'll reduce the number of queries sent directly to the Department of Insurance, which we're sure probably caused you hassle, because they come directly to you in various and sundry formats that you have no control over. So again, if you have any questions, you can send them to myself or Lois Alexander, and our phone numbers are also available. Please feel free to call or email. I admit I'm better with email than I am with a phone call.
Me too.
And Lois does the same thing. And part of it is because we're not at our desks very often. But do you all have any questions for us?
I have a question. This is Cheryl Yakey from Kemper. I tried sending an email because I wasn't able to access the slides either. I can't seem to find the original email where there's the link. But I tried l.alexander@neic.org and k.myers@neic.org and got a...
No dot.
Okay.
No dot.
Just Alexander and K. Myers, M-Y-E-R-S?
Yep, you've got it.
Okay. I'll resend my request. Thank you.
And I'll be more than happy to send that. And, in fact, I can slide into the slideshow a copy of what we think that report is going to look like, the request. It's not what the results of the request are, but what the screen looks like that you can select from.
At this time.
Things are subject to change. As we get further into, you know, confirmation on the requirements. So any concerns, any questions?
Well, if you think of any after the fact, just feel free to email us or give us a call, and we'll be happy to. I know this is all new to everybody, and it's come up very quickly, even though, as you know, it's been discussed for the last 6 or 7 years and on and off. And I know the ACLI has been involved in helping out with the various data elements. So I guess Joplin was what really made it come to fruition, with all the people that were killed in Joplin, Missouri, and all of their material items were just destroyed. So, you know, it just really got a push going on it right now. And I think it'll benefit industry, consumers, and regulators.
Yeah. And our question from Farm Bureau kind of brought up something that I hadn't mentioned. When you look at a lot of the applications that are in place today, a lot of them have been modeled from the Missouri solution. They talked to each other. Of course, they had some differing on whether the death certificate was necessary or not. You know, our ultimate goal is to not inundate you with duplicate requests. However, you know, and that's part of the purpose of the email that's going back to the consumer. And it's part of our reason for requiring the check boxes and the email address in and of itself.
I have a question. This is Donna from AFLAC, and I might have missed it because I was late getting to the video screens, finding my original email. But were you saying that, I know you just said about the death certificates. I actually like the death certificates because then I can see the legal name, because sometimes when we get the handwritten request, it's, you know, like 5 different names. Sometimes the spelling's different and you have to search multiple ways. But, and also sometimes you can't read the Social Security numbers. They're not very clear. Are you saying that you're not going to even supply Social Security numbers, or
we
did
will,
you say that
it's a required field for the
okay,
disease.
Good. Okay.
Yeah, and obviously everything, you don't have to worry about some of those the misspellings and not being able to read the handwriting.
Right.
I'm actually thinking of the Oklahoma, where sometimes you have a handwritten notices coming, or sometimes I don't know, O's and zeros look the same, mm-hmm. So we understood that.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully, because it's all electronic now, it eliminates some of that. And honestly, some of our regulators felt like if we made the death certificate available, that it may start a time clock clicking for you if you found a death certificate. So that was one of the main reasons that they really didn't want us to have to deal with it.
Yeah, regulators didn't want to artificially start a time clock on the claims process for the industry. So they were kind of looking out for industry as well. And so we'll leave that up to you. When you get the death certificate, then you'll know that's when your time clock starts.
Right.
And does that seem fair?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Good.
Hi, this is Ute again with Zurich. I have one more question kind of in that same direction. I like the death certificate sometimes, especially if we have a search on a John Smith. And sometimes at least the death certificate might give me a little bit additional information, such as the middle initial, which is very often left out on the actual request. So if we're not including it, which I understand the reasoning now, why can we not make the first name and middle initial a required field? I mean, with a name like mine, there will not be another person out there, but with the Millers and the Smiths, the more information to narrow down who this could be, that'd be great. Could we still make that a mandatory field?
I don't think it would. There's nothing to prevent us from making it a required field if all of our industry folks are in agreement.
However,
yes, go ahead with the however.
The regulator side of it, they felt like with the date of birth and the last name and the Social Security number, that all put together, in addition to whatever other information is there, they were pretty confident that most would be found.
And I think we're pretty confident, even when we've played with the form, as we've started testing it, almost automatically, because the first piece we present is the first name and last name, and people get very used to entering things in that format. And so our hope is that they'll just do it because it's something that people have been naturally trained to do. Does that make sense?
We have like a very old block of business where I might have an issue age but not a date of birth. And so by not having the first name, I mean, I'll get a higher hit ratio, and then it's difficult to say, well, this is sort of maybe, maybe not.
Well, the Social Security number should narrow that down, shouldn't it?
In old contracts, like I said, on legacy business, that was not required. And so I may not have all that information. So on newer contracts, yes, we do obviously have all of that information. But
we can run that by the regulator group. The others on the line, just out of curiosity, does that sound like something you'd want us to approach regulators with?
Hi, this is Cherie Seeley from Colonial Penn. I think that would also be beneficial if we could perhaps have that. I know with our older blocks of business, it is not required, and even some of our new policies are not required for a Social Security number. So I think if we could look further into that, that would probably be helpful on our end.
Okay.
So can we confirm with you all the fields that you believe need to be required? Is it just the first name?
And middle initial, if there is one.
Yeah, and unfortunately, because so many people don't have those middle initials, it makes it hard for us to validate against it.
That is true, but
first name, we can take back for approval with everybody?
Yes.
Yeah.
We can ask about the middle initial, and I mean,
yeah,
while we're asking, just to see if, because we'd like to get agreement, you know, on the regulator side as well.
What
and
about
our goal is,
do we have other names or maiden names? I don't recall
yes,
whether that was on that input screen.
Yeah. There was a list of 10, up to 10?
Up to 10 legal names.
Because we understand in some cultures, you know, there are maiden names carried over from mothers, and that there can be an extended number of names in different cultures.
Okay, good.
And we
thank
want to be
you
sensitive. Uh-huh. Anything else?
Hi, it's Elena from MassMutual again. A couple of comments. So I'm kind of glad to hear that the Social Security number is going to be a required field. From the data testing of the consumer site, do we feel that they are always going to have the Social Security number, or is there going to be an instance where they may just enter all zeros?
We're going to be validating against all zeros.
Okay.
So they can't enter all zeros?
We won't take
nine
it. All X's? Nope.
Yeah. So we are doing some, what we can in the way of validation. We're not adding full SSN validation rules, but, you know, no 666 in the first three digits, no, I believe it's nines, no zeros.
Right, all, not all.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah, we're doing some of that validation, although we can't prevent, because those numbers change.
We won't probably won't catch them all, but we're doing abroad at least.
Okay. And then kind of secondly, so I'm hearing, so I heard earlier that some of the states that have already launched Lost Policy Finder services sites may actually end up redirecting to the NAIC. So when we or insurers download a file, is NAIC going to have a prescribed response time, or are we going to need to default to that particular state's default response time?
I am glad you asked that question. We are assuming that there's not going to be an implicit date that's set out there. I think when you look at most states, they say 90 days for their unclaimed insurance policy process. We also know we have some states that have much tighter timeframes. And I wish I could give you a definitive answer.
We're still looking into that and discussing it. But thank you for bringing it up again, because it is a question. We're kind of thinking 90 days, but again, we have to come to a consensus. So hopefully, I mean, I know New York, I think Kim said it was 30 days and 45 if it's, you know, a TPA. So, and they call if you don't do it, but theirs is mandatory and it's statutory.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I think several states, at least for lost policy finder services, have somewhere, like I want to say Puerto Rico is kind of like search and respond to the lost policy within 10 days. A lot of other states are 30 days, but then for actual contacting the beneficiary, it's usually 90 days. So that's one of the reasons that I was just wondering about specifically the lost policy finder.
Interesting.
That's the first time we've heard that on Puerto Rico.
Yeah, we've reached out to them, but we'll have to do that again. So appreciate the information.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thank you.
This is Tracy from Homesteaders. I have a question. You said that when they are entering in, filling out the form, if they do not have an email address or don't want to provide one, they can send a written request into the state and for the loss policy. Will the state then input that information into the database so that it gets mailed out or sent out the first of the month in this report, or will that come out as a separate request by the state to the companies? How will that work?
You know, they haven't really clarified to us how it would work. I think we were kind of making an assumption that they would enter the information. However, we don't know that for a fact.
Right. We weren't planning to do paper, but if some states wanted it, and we understand the reasoning behind that. I'm sure you all ran across that too. So, you know, that's a detail that's still it's still being worked out right now.
Yeah. But this process does expect an email address. And we're even giving them directions how to build a Gmail account if they don't have an email address.
Right.
This is Lucinda with AFLAC. If I know you said that some states might still use their own lost life policy searches, so if possible, we would receive a request from the NAIC and a separate request from a state, which would be a duplicate request?
Well, we anticipate that states won't be doing that. But, again, that's one of those details that has yet to be worked out. You know, we're in discussions with them currently about that. So, I mean, the idea is to make it easier, not to duplicate.
Right.
Now, of course, the participants that we're asking to voluntarily do this, the industry members, are those that, you know, are required to file an annual statement with the NAIC and also have $50,000 or more in direct annual premium or annuity considerations. So it doesn't actually probably cover every single, like a fraternal, a mutual, a smaller, like state-located, local.
Right.
It might not cover those. So the states might do something in those in that regard as well. We don't know yet. We're still discussing those.
Right. And we should also let you know that this is for individual policies alone.
Yes.
Any group policies are covered by ERISA rules and are separate from this.
That again, it's for what?
Individual life insurance policies or annuity contracts, excluding like pre-need type insurance
or credit. Right.
So you said it's not policy?
not credit, not pre-need, and not group insurance.
Not group insurance, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yeah, this is Patrick Wallen from Voya. Just a quick question, and you may have already covered it, so I apologize. But what formats are the downloadable searches going to take? Are they Excel or?
They'll be CSV for Excel.
Thank you.
Did we have one other question there?
Hi, this is Amaryllis Gonzalez from Jackson National. I recall in the earlier communications, there was mention that this data would be incorporated somehow into the MCAS filing?
It's
no.
Not going to be included in MCAS filing. Those were the email address or the logins we were going to initially use when we set you all up.
Understood. Thank you.
Yeah, there will be a contact for the Life Policy Locator added through the JURAT page going forward. We anticipate that to be ready for the next quarterly statement. So in the interim, for a brief period, and those that don't do MCAS or in the state, or that operate only in states that aren't currently doing MCAS, can contact NEICN and can be assigned an access code to be used in the interim.
Yep. Anything else? No. Well, we thank you all for your time and your great questions.
Yes.
And again, we'll send the PowerPoint out, especially to those, we'll send them out if you request them, I guess, is what I should say.
Alrighty, and feel free to contact us if you have any further questions.
Thank you all very much.
Take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.